Hello, and welcome to Tech Access Weekly, a podcast of unspecified length concerning news and events in accessible technology. This is episode 21 for January 11th, 2010, the Binary Edition. Well, hello everyone. It is time yet again for another episode, January 11th. Today's date is a binary number, taking out the two, of course. Yesterday's date was a binary number. And these are the last binary numbers you'll see for a while, till next year, and then next century there may be one or two. This was pointed out on Twitter by Dave Weiner, one of the inventors of the blogging experience.
I believe that's RSS.
Well, whichever.
Yeah.
Same difference, almost. This is Aaron, and as you hear, Rodney's with me, and we've got a lot of CES types of stories to cover today about different products that are currently being touted throughout the market. Some of them are accessible, most of them are not. And CES, in case anyone does not know what that is the Consumer Electronics Show, and it takes place in Las Vegas every year in January.
And it's considered the international CES.
Oh, that I didn't know.
Yeah.
All right. So what shall we start with today?
Well, CES is basically geek nirvana. It's probably 10 miles of nothing but technology, gadgets, gizmos, and such in Las Vegas. Coincidentally, it was right across the street this year from an adult entertainment convention of some sort. A lot of tech reporters had to say their funny little anecdotes. Double entendres, if you will. But the week started off on the 5th with a Google announcement. They finally released the Nexus One that we had talked about a few weeks ago, where there were employee sightings of the Nexus. This is a much more polished phone than the Droid. It has a little bit more power. The screen and Android is a new version of Android, so it's like 2.1 version. Everybody's sort of thinking that it could be a good competitor for the iPhone. Nobody considers it really an iPhone killer at this point, but this year may be the year for Android phones to sort of take their place amongst the iPhones.
I hope Google's not going to be sued over the name by Philip Dick's estate, because Nexus One, incidentally, Philip K. Dick, science fiction writer, wrote a book called Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep? And it was in that book, I believe it was the name of the company that made the androids.
It was the Nexus 6.
Yes.
And apparently there was like one, maybe two references to Nexus One in prior versions.
So
plus the operating system is Android.
So yes.
It's like a total geek paying homage to that book. But the interesting thing about the Nexus One is the fact that it's going to be sold at either subsidized by T-Mobile, which here in the States is not that great of a carrier from what I understand.
No.
Which is funny too, because their website really doesn't say welcome Nexus One owners or anything. It just sort of leaves it out in the air. But the Nexus One is going to also be sold as a unlocked phone. So for I believe it's just over $500, you can purchase the phone.
Right.
And the idea is that maybe this is going to make it so that cell phone companies will have to actually sell phones that you can move from carrier to carrier, which is more like what happens in the Europe areas, where you're signing a contract, but you're not tied to that particular carrier with the phone.
Oh, cool.
Or however that
works. Right. So aside from cell phones, incidentally, that will have a built-in screen reader for it, just like the iPhone does. Other than cell phones, what else was touched on?
Well, cell phones were really big. A lot of different versions, Dell Mini, things like that. But one of the main highlights of CES was automotive. The Ford Sync and all of the little applications that go along with this.
I'd want one of these cars. I mean, I don't drive or anything, but I still want one of these cars.
Yeah, that'd be really good. We can sit out in the parking lot and just watch people go by. Hi!
Ford My Touch.
Well, the original is Ford Sync by Microsoft, and I guess it's sort of going to be a confusing rebrand because they're going to have the Ford My Touch, and can't remember what the other one is that's a little confusing.
Well, there's My Touch, and then there's one for My Focus, is it? Because, like, the Ford Focus is going to have it, and the Lincoln and Mercury are going to have it.
Yeah, there's maybe that's what it is.
My
there's
Lincoln Touch, versions. I think it is. I think it's just different versions.
Could be. But if anybody doesn't know, the Ford Sync is a outstanding software package developed by Microsoft here in the United States, and it allows people to do just about anything with voice activation. You can make phone calls, ask for particular songs to be played, look for GPS locations. You can even, in the updated process, do tweets. You can Twitter from your car.
Also, it has a web browser that you can use only while the car is in park, but you can browse the internet. It has iTunes support. It has improved interaction with climate control, within the car. I think the controls are easier to get to in the new My Touch models. They are located on the steering column, and there are more displays in the car as well in different places on the dashboard.
I believe the CEO of Ford Sync actually designed cockpits for Boeing 747s and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So his idea was to bring the cockpit experience to the Ford automobiles.
Wow. That's very impressive.
So it's quite intimidating, I believe. I mean, the pictures you see of the Ford Sync dashboard and everything are just tons and tons of lights.
And also, one good thing about this new model, we will also say it's a Wi-Fi hotspot, and it comes with SD card slots. And one of the reasons why it has SD card slots is not only can you bring your own information and plug it in, but you will be sent upgrades for the firmware in the car via SD card. And you can just plug it in and let it go.
Yeah, and there will probably even be internal hard drives that you can have in your car. This kind of technology is fascinating and should help out the Detroit automakers that have been in trouble for the last year or so.
Oh, definitely. Didn't they feature a Ford Sync on Fringe one night?
I believe so.
She was in her car and she called somebody.
Yes, it
read back who she was calling. She was doing a voice-activated phone call.
Yeah, it was something like that. But Ford Sync has been making a real push over podcasting. A lot of networks that do podcasts and such are advertising Ford Sync like crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of an interesting thing. It's kind of like Ford is actually getting the idea of ways to advertise with new media. So that's kind of an interesting turn of events. Maybe the music and movie industries will decide to do something like that as opposed to shunning all the internet activities.
Moving right along
with the segue, sort of.
Mm-hmm.
Another big topic at CES was the 3D television advancements. Everywhere at CES is just 3D, 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 ugh. 3D. I don't really understand the purpose of it other than it sounds cool.
Mm-hmm.
All different TV manufacturers are coming out with their various LCD televisions, whether they're liquid crystals or cell technology. There's a lot of questions as to whether consumers actually do want 3D televisions in their homes.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the issues revolve around there's, say, three different types of 3D technology, and then you have to have stupid glasses.
Yeah.
If you wear glasses, that means you then have to wear glasses on top of glasses.
Yeah, that would be a little hard for you, wouldn't it?
Yeah, so, I mean, it's kind of, everybody looks like idiots sitting in their living room wearing these stupid-looking glasses like you wear at a movie theater.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you want to have a bunch of people over, everybody's got to have glasses or the television looks fuzzy.
Right.
So I think it's going to probably end up being one of these things where they just put another sticker on the televisions and say it's 3D capable.
Right, probably so.
And then people that maybe want to watch movies that are designed for 3D, like Avatar or something, or could be really interesting in sporting events.
Mm-hmm.
That could be a way for them just to sort of get it in everybody's head that, hey, for an extra $100, you can get 3D technology. Well, I might not use it, but okay.
Exactly. And this just points out the fact that as technology gets more and more complex, people want more and more realism. Ray Kurzweil pointed out in a recent article that 3D is going to become more popular. This was way before CES, actually several years ago. I guess that's not so recent now that I think about it. That 3D was going to become more and more popular, and that people would eventually have, like, I guess, implants in themselves to do all sorts of things. And one of them would be to view, you know, in 3D, experience the TV and things in 3D would be built into that. I don't remember where the article was I read that. And also that other sensory experiences can be built into that too, so that you could almost somehow simulate touching something or smelling something if, you know, the television had it built in.
Well, and also for 3D technology, it's you feel like you're immersed. Like mm-hmm. objects are coming towards you, or there's depth perception where plants or things are off in a distance, and they actually look like they're off in a distance.
I guess it'd be interesting to me to see how multisensory this gets in the future. I mean, it not only could it focus on 3D, but it also could focus on other sensory stimuli too, smell and touch, and maybe sooner than we think we'll have the hologram experience from Star Trek.
Well,
in our own living rooms.
Well, I think the biggest issue you have is the glasses, because you have to literally be sitting directly in front of a television that has 3D technology with the glasses. You can't, like, lay down on the couch and enjoy something that you're watching, because it's going to distort mm-hmm. it and make it blurry and all mm-hmm. this. So I think that's going to be the biggest objection to 3D technology. Now, something that's coming up in televisions is the use of hand motions.
Mm-hmm.
A couple televisions that are advertised. CES is one of these shows where a lot of vendors are trying to sell and get buyers to invest in their products.
Right.
So most things do not have release dates.
Mm-hmm.
So that causes confusion some with CES. But there are some televisions that are going to have motion capabilities where you can change channels or select information off of the screen with your hand gestures and things like that. Over the weekend, I was watching Leo Laporte's coverage on his TwitLive network. They went down for five straight days and did wall-to-wall coverage of CES, which was quite impressive, the fact that they were doing a lot of streaming over Wi-Fi, internet, network cards, whether it was Sprint or Verizon. I think they used cards, whatever card was doing the best at that particular moment. But they showed a lady at one of the booths doing this demonstration, and it just sort of worked like half of the time,
mm-hmm.
if that much. So it's kind of like,
maybe not quite yet.
I don't really get the point in it.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to look like an idiot, probably, waving at your television. I want the next channel, not that channel. Go forward.
Mm-hmm.
But that's an interesting thing. Some televisions are rumored to be coming out with Skype. I can't remember whether it was...
I don't understand that, but
yeah,
okay.
I can't remember whether it was LG or Samsung or who had the Skype televisions. TVs will come built in with cameras,
mm-hmm.
and then you'll be able to have a Skype interface on the screen where you can actually call and talk to different people. The only problem with this is that if the person on the other end has a really crappy webcam, then
mm-hmm.
you're going to see really splotchy video and things like this. So it's not really sure how well that's going to work, especially if people are sitting 10 or 15 feet away from their TVs, how is that actually going to pick up on a
right.
Skype camera?
Another thing that's interesting about TVs that they're coming out with, finally, an accessible set-top box. I guess this would be sort of considered like a receiver, and it will talk. There's a company called Ocean Blue Software, I think, based on their website. They're located in the UK, and they have a primary hardware device developed, a preliminary one that they're just demonstrating at this point. And they were at CES, but I don't know that there was a release date set on when this would be released. Essentially, what it does is it will read you the menus if you're going through on your cable or satellite channels. It will read the channels as you go by, give you lists and schedules of programming, all with speech output. And you can even set it to read subtitles, or if movie has audio description, you can set it to read that too.
Come on, subtitles.
Yeah, we really would love that for subtitles. Even for sighted people, it'd be great to have it for subtitles. But like I said, I don't know when this is coming out. I don't know what cable provider they'll work with, whether it'll be available to everybody, how the purchasing, you know, there are still a lot of unanswered questions. But I think it's high time that someone came out with a product that does this, especially since a lot of us have DVRs now, you know, to record television, and like to have control over what's on and like to have a schedule that we can have access to. And it's nice to have that built in to your television experience rather than having to go to the website and get the information.
Yeah, I watched the demonstration that they had on their website, which actually had a captcha that was not audible.
Yeah, what brains. Anyway, I believe your solution was very legible.
Yeah, the solution was very legible, wasn't hard to read or anything like that. So that was a good thing.
But for me, as a blind person, and this software is supposed to be for blind people, stupid thing, had no audio alternative, which I found just so amusing.
So it basically works through the menus. You can change the different color schemes, whether it's white text on black or white on blue. You can get help information. You can find where you are on menus. You can go through a list of menu options, or you can go through a grid pattern. It'll talk to you as far as whether you're watching a show and what the time frame is, whether you've already missed 15 minutes or something like that. So it's kind of going through the TiVo experience or the DVR experience, where you're wanting to select shows to watch or flip through a guide, I guess you would say.
Right.
I don't know whether the UK has different words for remote control buttons or not, but one of the buttons was called the shh.
Oh, how
for mute,
cute.
Because it was so that you could make the speech stop, sort of like the control key in Jaws.
But it was actually
shh. And now.
Oh, that didn't mean we should stop talking, did it?
Oh, yeah. I thought you were telling me to be quiet.
So did I. Anyway.
You can tell we communicate really well.
Uh-huh. So now where to?
Well, another big development in the same direction as set-top boxes are streaming video. There are quite a few different services coming out to stream television, whether it be to your, whether to stream television to mobile devices or computers, or to actually stream internet to your television. One of the major players is the Boxy Box. It's a Linux distribution built off of the XBMC that came out a few years ago. It's like a media center. You can select and have a library and look for different media options on the internet and view those on your television. They've actually come out with a box that gives you an interface. I guess it's sort of going to be a competitor to the Roku player. It has a little bit more functionality to that.
And here you were thinking of buying a Roku player.
Still not above the possibilities. But there's also other options like Flow TV. They are a service that will actually replay or restream television programs. I believe there's a subscription service you have to do to that for that to stream to mobile phones. So it will actually use Wi-Fi networks. Not sure whether it uses the 3G networks of the cell carriers to get information to you or not. Another program that is coming out is Tivit, which basically is sort of a streamer to little bitty mobile devices such as iPhones and iPod touches. That's kind of an interesting thing, but it's actually using TV signals to send across the information.
Interesting.
But at CES, that's just the tip of the iceberg to things that are more in the accessible area, because TVs somewhat accessible, set-top boxes not very accessible. But the other area that is really big this year and will probably be for coming years is the tablet PCs.
Two areas, actually, but we'll start with the tablet PCs.
We'll start with the tablet PCs. Apple is rumored to be releasing a slate-type device at the end of January on the 27th when they have their media event. All of the other manufacturers, Dell, Samsung, Toshiba, HP, Lenovo, they're all coming out with their own versions of slate PCs.
And I'll point out that a lot of these slate PCs are, I guess with the exception of Apple probably, are going to be running Linux because it's a smaller and less expensive software package and takes up less, I guess, memory and storage. So Linux is really coming into its own this year with netbooks, tablets, and even e-readers such as the Kindle who are running it.
Yeah, and the tablet PCs, they're being called the Slate form factor. So I don't know whether they're thinking that that's really what Apple's going to call theirs or not.
Mm-hmm.
But one that is quite interesting and actually won one of the CES Best of Show awards was the Lenovo U1 IdeaPad. This is an interesting tablet because it is actually a netbook that is capable of having the screen removed. The interesting thing about this is that the netbook itself runs
Windows.
I guess it's actually considered more of a laptop than a netbook. It's a little bit more powerful than that. But the laptop portion itself where the keyboard is actually runs Windows 7, and then you're able to just as easily pull off the screen and actually have a tablet that you can hold, which is like a 10-inch screen, looks kind of like a Kindle or e-reader of some sort, and then it automatically loads up into a version of Linux.
And it's an e-reader, or is it can you still use it as a tablet?
It is a tablet.
Mm-hmm.
So you can take this to the bathroom with you if you
want. Oh, please.
But the cool thing is that the PC portion that's running Windows 7 actually continues to run. So if you had an external monitor or something, you could have it hooked up to that.
Wow.
Take the tablet portion and go somewhere else and use it. And then when you come back, they will sync up.
Oh, neat.
So it's like if you had your web browser on the tablet, say on a news site, CNN or something, and you plugged it back into the actual keyboard portion, Internet Explorer would launch and actually have CNN right where you were left off.
Oh, nice.
So it's kind of an interesting thing. Plus, it has touch technology, probably an on-screen keyboard and that kind of thing. But that was very impressive when I saw a couple of demos on that. So that should be interesting. Then we can head over into e-readers.
Yeah. And you were right. A few months ago, you said, a couple of months ago maybe, that this next year was going to be the year for e-readers and tablets. And it's already starting out to be that. A huge number of companies came out with e-readers. The question is, you know, how many of them are going to survive and are actually unique enough? But you have a couple.
One that's really interesting is the Entourage Edge e-reader. This is a two-panel e-reader. So there's a left and a right. And one side actually runs a version of either Windows or Linux, possibly even Android. It can sort of have any flavor that they want to. And then on the other side is actually an e-book reader. And you can pass information back and forth from one side to the other.
Oh, that is really cool.
So you can look at EPUB or PDF files on the e-reader side and then dump it over to the computer side if you want to email it to someone or something like that. Gives a lot of opportunities for having multimedia PDFs, possibly, where you could actually shift it over and then watch something actually happen on the screen, which is something that you can do with the Kurzweil endorsed Blio.
Yes. This is very interesting. It is not an e-reader. It is a software package. And at this point, It is free. It does not cost money. That has a release month of February. Not exactly sure when, but you will have access to 1 million titles, if not more, fairly soon after it is released. And you install it on a computer or, I believe it also works on certain cell phones with Windows 7, or it works on the iPhone. So it works on pretty much most operating systems. And you can read ebooks with this software. Most of them are in XPS format, which I find kind of interesting, at least to start with. But the differences between that and the current e-readers, one of them is that it has a much better grasp or handle on graphics. They look very realistic when reading magazines and other books that have very complex pictures in them. Another very interesting thing is that certain books, it's very multimedia, so it can use all of your computer's multimedia capabilities. Certain books are going to have, I think, audio captions, like perhaps children's books. So not only can you read the children's book, can the children see it on the screen, but there will be actual audio narration built into the book. I don't know if it's people narrating it or if it's voice narrating it. And I believe that the books will also have some speech output. Now, in terms of how accessible the software is in design, I haven't the faintest idea. Just because Ray Kurzweil endorses this doesn't mean it's accessible, folks. But I have all ideas that more and more accessibility improvements will be put into it as the software grows and develops. There are also ways in which you can interact with other people who are using the Blio at the same time through the internet, through the cloud. You can see, I guess, who's reading the same books you are, what chapters they're on, and post comments to one another about the book
it's very social networking oriented.
Very much so.
The example they gave was, okay, you're in a book, you're reading it, you're at chapter 12, and you can notice that a friend of yours that is in your network is also in chapter 12, mm-hmm. and they maybe are a couple pages behind or ahead of you or something like that. And you can actually converse and send information back and forth between you. You can make comments. You can say, oh, well, make sure to watch out for this one little paragraph because it sort of builds upon a previous thought or mm-hmm. something like that. So it kind of gives a little bit of a book club atmosphere.
That's really fascinating.
The multimedia portions, one of the examples they showed at CBS was a medical textbook where mm-hmm. you actually had a picture of like a human skull or something, and it had like markings for the different bones and things like this, and you could touch them on the screen.
Ooh, cool.
I don't know whether you could actually, I guess with, say, a
pointer,
or I guess if you had like a touch screen e-reader or something that you were using, you could touch it that way, mm-hmm. and then it would read to you or jump off to a video or something like that. And then some things were like books that would actually look like you were sitting down reading a book. So the pages would turn and mm-hmm. flip and things like that. And then if you carried it over to, say, the iPod or iPhone application, it would actually do the exact same thing. So it was kind of like the experience was the same whether you were on the computer or on a small device.
Yeah, I had heard that.
But just in looking at the demos and things like that, it doesn't look like it will be tremendously accessible because it's very graphic oriented and very point and click for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
But like with anything, the regular version has to come first, and then hopefully the next one will come.
Mm-hmm. And developments will be added in.
So, in a couple of interesting little gadgets that I heard about, one is the Philips Activa MP3 player.
Dear.
Apparently, this MP3 player will attempt to follow your pulse and heartbeat to play music accordingly. If you're running, it should give you more up-tempo. If you're at rest, it should give you slower, relaxing music to listen to.
How funny.
No clue as to whether it really works well or not.
Mm-hmm.
But that's kind of funny. There was a small little piece of jewelry at CES called the Orb, and this was a Bluetooth headset that you wore in a ring.
How?
It was a little bitty ring, and if you heard your phone ringing, you could look at it, see that a call was coming in, and then you could take the top off and put it on your ear like a Bluetooth.
How weird.
Yeah, that was kind of interesting.
What about the wallet?
And there is a iWallet.
This is the coolest thing. I think I want one, except for it's a little expensive at the moment.
Yes. But if you want to start selling a kidney or something.
Yeah. It will open only to your fingerprint.
Yes. It's the website is iWalletUSA.com. Just happened a guy came up to Leo Laporte during his Tech Guy podcast and radio show and was demonstrating it on Sunday afternoon. It's a hard case wallet that you have a little bitty thumbprint reader on, and you train it to only open for your thumbprint. So if your brother or sister or someone steals your wallet, they can't get into it because their finger is never going to actually open it. This is also interesting because it is going to have firmware updates that you can download to the wallet. Not only can you get it for your Ford Zinc car, but you can also get it for your wallet now. The updates that are coming up in the near future would allow for GPS tracking so that if someone stole your wallet, you could actually go to the police department and they would be able to track your wallet and find it. And there's also the capability with the iWallet to alert you. If you get more than 30 feet away from your wallet, it will alert you.
Oh, gosh.
And it will even call your cell phone to alert you that, hey, you're leaving me behind. So that's kind of interesting.
That's funny.
The only problem is that the top-of-the-line model is $600, and then they have a fiberglass version that is $300.
But that's only available for a limited time.
Well, yeah, but right now they only sell the product over the web. They're looking for people to invest and actually get a distributor. But it seems like something that would be really cool, but it's really expensive.
Yeah.
But that's a lot of what I was watching on CES coverage over the last 4 or 5 days. As you kept complaining that I was continuing to watch the internet. But a lot of the products look really interesting. There's a lot coming out this year, a lot of tablets, a lot of automotive things, a lot of televisions, 3D, and all the such. Whether things are actually going to turn out being accessible or not, the verdict is still out on that. Hopefully, a lot of the cell phones and things will start to have better voice recognition and speech output that people can use.
Well, in a lousy attempt to segue, we wanted to talk mostly about CES, but there were a couple of things that I wanted to point out, one of which is about Facebook. CES, for instance, demonstrated that gadgets are proliferating like crazy, and a lot of the gadgets have a social aspect to them, like the Blio. And Facebook, of course, is all about social networking. Mark Zuckerberg last week made some statements about Facebook and the privacy changes that they have implemented over the past months. He basically, in an interview, said that if he had it to do all over again, he would make everything public and not give people any choices about making things private. And he stated the reasons for this were, in his opinion, that people expect things to be public nowadays. Society is changing. People are very social. They want people to know about them. You know, you can see this in reality television and the fact that a lot of, based on people, people's preferences and what they post and how they talk to people, based on the blogging and the Twitter sphere, that people are just very open about what they share to everyone. And so if he were to do this going again, he said, well, he would just make everything public and people would not get much of a choice about what they made private. This interview was done in response to the fact that people were getting very upset that now their gender, their name, their picture, and the pages that they are linked to on Facebook are now publicly searchable on the internet. And so
I believe there's even a few potential lawsuits pending based on this.
There are. Further details later when we get further details. But
one sort of funny thing about the whole privacy changes that Facebook did.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, Mark Zuckerberg, the CEO and creator of Facebook, did not really know what was going to be completely public, because apparently some people had noticed that a lot of pictures that he had on his profile were put out there, and then next thing you know, a lot of them are gone off of his profile. So evidently some photos and information that he did not want to get out there actually showed up on his public profile.
Oopsie.
But the whole move is just to try and get Facebook to be more like Twitter, be a little bit more open, allow them to get search results and things on Google and other.
Yeah, and some people were claiming that Facebook wants advertising revenue, and the more information they can put out about people, the more sponsors and advertisers they'll get, and the more closely they can tailor ads that show up on people's web pages to people's profiles. So I heard that in a couple articles I read, that might be one of the reasons why they decided to make these things public, despite his, you know, assertions that, oh, people are just more social and expect to be more public in their dealings. It's very interesting because a couple years ago, he was really touting the privacy, saying that, you know, Facebook's main goal was, or one of its main goals, was to keep people's information as private as possible and to have to give them as much control over it as possible so that they can be as public or as private with whatever they want to be. And now it seems like it's going back on his word a little bit there.
Yeah, Facebook was really put out there as being, okay, give us truthful information. We'll be truthful with you and help you reconnect with people.
Right.
And that's how it's always been. Because truthfully, the more information you put into Facebook, the easier it is for you to reconnect with people. But now it's starting to get to the point that you really can't trust that, seeing as how the potential is there for personal information, locations, phone numbers, different things like that to actually get out there in search results. Not a good thing.
No.
Kind of fits in there with the Google Goggles application that they have, where you can take a picture of signs or landmarks and it'll give you actually information about that particular place that you're at.
Right.
That technology actually has the capability of doing people's faces as well.
Oh, right. We talked about that before, I think.
I believe so. I'm not sure. But there's a lot of security concerns over that because, okay, some crazy stalker out there finds somebody that he really likes or has a fascination with, he or her, and takes a picture. It says, oh, here's Katie. She's 24. She has one kid. She's not married. She has a good paying job and yada, yada, all this. And you can get all this information just from search. But luckily, Google has disabled that. So it just...
So, dear, who's Katie?
I will not tell who Katie is.
Oh, you better.
But I tell you, she's mighty nice. Anyway.
Anyhow. So that's just a few developments on the Facebook privacy debate. It'll be interesting to see what ends up happening, whether there are lawsuits and how they deal with those.
And Katie, if you're out there, we would like to find out about your solar system. Speaking of solar systems, that was a bad segue. Sorry.
Ooh, that was really bad. We really need segue development lessons.
Drink.
The Kepler NASA telescope has discovered a new solar system with, well, I guess there are several solar systems, but with five new planets. And these planets are very hot, very have strange kind of densities. They're not really habitable by humans. They're not in that Goldilocks zone where you know, have just the right density, just the right water, just the right atmospheric concentration to be livable. But they are five new planets to add to the universe's library. Some of them have very interesting features. Some of them are very lightweight. In, I think, one case, the planet's density was that of styrofoam. They can figure these things out. Really amazes me, but they can. Also, some of them were puzzles because they were technically, they were located at certain distances from the sun, but they were also warmer than they should be. For, you know, these located at these certain distances. So that's another puzzle that scientists are looking into. Other things that this telescope has discovered so far include objects that are orbiting stars that are significantly hotter than they should be, not just planets, but strange objects, and they're not sure what they are. They're not dwarf stars. They're not anything that they know that they can classify. So they'll have to work further on that. All of this data is from the six beginning weeks of the mission. So this mission started in May, I think it was, and so this data is only from May and part of June that they have analyzed. They haven't as yet analyzed any data since then, I don't think. So this is all just within 6 weeks' worth of data, which is pretty amazing.
What's interesting to me is the fact that they can decide that a planet has the density of styrofoam, but we can't tell that the moon has water unless we blow it up.
Yeah.
Something about that just doesn't work.
Well, I mean, all this mathematics and things that they have to do for the, like, really far away stuff is just interesting to me. And you kind of wonder, I mean, it's all kind of theoretical. So is it actually true? So, you know, take it with a grain of salt.
But wasn't there a report or something saying that they had found numerous planets that looked sustainable for life?
Yeah, there was a couple that looked sustainable in very brief belts on the planets. I believe it was only in certain really small parts that they looked sustainable. But yeah, there is a term that scientists have called the Goldilocks zone. And if a planet fits all these, you know, categories, everything's just right, it will be, you know, termed sustainable. Now, whether there is actual life on it or not is a completely different story. And we say sustainable, but that's for our particular form of organic life, not for anything weird and crazy that might be out there that we don't know about yet.
So there could actually be visitors.
Mm-hmm. Visitors.
But I guess we'll have to wait and see if they ever make contact. Mm. Or they may be sitting there doing a podcast saying the exact same thing we are right mm-hmm. now, that there could be something yep. out there.
Or there could be little silicone crabs, like on Pluto. People hypothesize that there is life out there that is non-organic that we just might not even know about. On another note,
what in the world could people or life out there like to pirate?
Well, people
here... That was a bad attempt at a segue, by the way.
Yeah.
Drink.
I don't know about what life out there does in terms of piracy, but here on Earth, there were some statistics done, that studies done, that suggested last year's top pirated material. I think they used some BitTorrent tracking devices or something. Well, anyway, the top book downloaded last year, top illegal download, was the Kama Sutra, the Indian sex book, as people call it.
Bow, 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 bow.
What gets me about this, you pointed it out earlier, dear, is that it's free from Project Gutenberg, so why would people want to download it? And I'm thinking maybe they want the pictures.
Maybe. Maybe it's updated full photos, illustrations.
Yeah. Especially since the second download was something like secrets to Adobe photo sharing and development or something. Something makes me think that those two things go together for a lot of people.
Pasty white geeks that can't get out.
Yeah. most of the other stuff that was illegally pirated was also sort of had a sexual component to it of the top tens. The only two things I can think of that didn't was one book that explained how to put solar panels on your house, and another book that took you through the top handyman sorts of projects you can do around the house. So essentially, these are people who don't get out much and are very deprived.
I don't know. I mean, you can run into that kind of stuff whenever you go to something like Amazon.com. If you're searching for, it doesn't matter what you're searching for, mm-hmm. you always get the customers that
bought this product.
And then you look through it and you're like, who was this?
Yeah.
And why did they buy that?
Mm-hmm.
So this person purchased a nice Canon camera and a Tegomi Elmo. Don't quite know why.
Yeah.
So,
on that note, I think that about wraps it up for this podcast.
Seems that way.
We will try next time to develop better segues.
Drink.
And to have it be not quite such a gadget-focused episode. But we hope that you've all enjoyed this. And we will see you next time. Thanks for listening.
To contact the team for Tech Access Weekly, send an email to techaccessweekly@gmail.com. Or you may leave a voice message at 260-2-ASK-TAW, 260-227-5829. Please visit our website at techaccessweekly.com.